Welcome to the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast. I am Don Bishop, and I write as T.S. Pedramon.
Today, I'm going to have a conversation with author Jessica Flory about clean fantasy, which I was excited to find her profile on Instagram and message her and get to know a little bit. Like, she has found that there is a following for fantasy that is specifically clean. Now, that's not the only thing about it. Like, there, well, listen to the interview. But before we get to that, I have started doing public appearances. I told you last week that I would do this, and I did. Yesterday, I went to a library to do a signing event, and it was exciting. I was nervous, and it went well. Today, I went to another one. It was slow, even though there were more people. Fewer people, proportionally, fewer people came and talked to me. And that's fine. That's just a different crowd. And tomorrow, I'm going to two libraries. So last week, I said I would tell you where I'm going to be this coming week. So I'm going to do that now, before we get into the interview. So tomorrow, I told you this part last week, but tomorrow I'll be at the, and this is all within the Central Rappahannock Regional Library System. I hope to do other library systems soon, but this is where I'm starting out. And tomorrow I will be at the Newton Branch in Hague, Virginia, and that's on Coles Point Road, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Also tomorrow, actually, I should be saying today. So if you're listening to the podcast on the release date on March 28th, then this is today. So I hope you're listening in the morning, and I hope you just happen to be close to these places. Otherwise, there's no way you're going to catch me. In the afternoon, from 3 to 6 p.m., I will be at the Montrose Branch in Montrose, Virginia, and that's on Polk Street. Again, from 3 to 6 p.m. 3 to 6 p.m. Next week, on April 2nd, I will be at the Snow Branch in Spotsylvania, and that's on Courthouse Road. So just go to the library in Spotsylvania, and you'll find me from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. And I'll be set up with a table there, and it'll be like the pictures that you can see on my Instagram profile. And that's at Grand Hill Chronicles is my profile on Instagram. And finally, because I'm not going to go beyond next week, finally on Wednesday, April 3rd, I will be at the Porter Branch on Parkway Boulevard in Stafford from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. And yeah, it was fun. And I look forward to these, and I'm going to keep doing them. Yesterday, somebody told me that her niece or some relation just recently opened a bookstore about an hour north of me. So I'm going to be sending her an email. I just remembered I need to do that. But yeah, I'll be trying to get into more libraries and bookstores to get the word out and meet cool and interesting people. So yeah, other than that, I'm going to go ahead and jump into today's episode. So, and next week we'll have an interview with author Herman P. Hunter about how he preps for an event, you know, what he brings to an event to make it successful. And we go off topic. But we have a really interesting conversation that I'm going to split into two episodes in editing. But just because we talked so much about different things. Yeah, without further ado, here's the interview. I am here with author Jessica Flory. Did I pronounce that correctly? It doesn't look like a difficult name.
Yeah, you got it right.
Okay. And well, let's let our listeners get to know you a little bit. So you write fantasy, and I myself know very little about you. I happened across you on Instagram and saw that you're writing in the same niche as I am. So thought it'd be good to have you on.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. Yeah, you're right. I write young adult fantasy with a good amount of romance in there. And it's always, my books will always be clean. That's a big thing for me. That's really important to me. I like to read and write clean books. So no explicit scenes, no swearing, just, you know, fantasy made up swear words. So that's always fun. But yeah, that's what I like to write. I live in Missouri with my husband and four kiddos. We've got three boys and a girl, and they are 4, 6, 8, and 10. So we are not busy at all. Life is super peaceful, and it's great.
Yeah, not busy at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have kids of similar ages. We have a 12-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 4-year-old.
Oh, that's great. How fun. Yeah, they're fun ages.
Yeah. So for our listeners, yeah, that's our topic is clean fantasy, and we'll dig into that. And before anybody, like, I don't know, maybe you like the occasional raunchy book, but you know, hear us out and have a listen as to why we have chosen to write the way we do. And yeah, so Jessica, what's your just to get to know you a little bit better. Mm-hmm. What's your schooling background or professional previous to writing? Or I don't know, how did you get into writing?
Yeah, good question. Well, I've loved to write since I was a kid. Since I was really young, I always wanted to be an author. It's been a dream of mine to have a book published. And yeah, having that dream realized is just, can't even describe it. It's been such an amazing experience. My first book came out last year, so I'm relatively new to writing. I've got another book coming out tomorrow and one later this year, so I'm really excited about that. But yeah, as far as like professional life and schooling goes, in college I studied molecular biology, so nothing to do with writing. But I did take the occasional writing class to kind of give my brain a break, and because it was something I really loved. So I've kept learning and kept studying it. And actually, my biology background has been surprisingly helpful when I'm designing worlds and magic systems and things. It's kind of nice to have that scientific background because I really like to play with science and physics mm-hmm. in my world and kind of change things and just see what's going to happen. So that's been fun. And I did use my biology degree for a little while. I was a cancer research assistant, and it was awesome. I loved it. And then we started having kids, and I really wanted to stay home and be with them. So I started writing a little bit more whenever I could during nap time, and whenever I got, you know, 15 minutes to myself, just writing a little bit more. So that's kind of how we got to where we're at today, just writing a little bit every day and kept on trying and trying and trying. And my first novel was not published. Neither was my second, neither was my third. But I kept getting better and I stuck with it. And then the fourth novel I wrote was my first book that was published. So yeah, dream come true.
Do you have any plans to, go back and take those first three books and rework them into something you want to publish? Or are those just learning experiences?
Definitely learning experiences. I see now why they weren't good enough. I might pull like ideas from them that I liked, but yeah, the books themselves were not ready to be published, and I couldn't see it at the time. But now I've learned enough that I can see why they didn't get picked up. So
yeah. So did you? Are you traditionally published or did you self-publish?
So a little bit of both. So my first novel was traditionally published by a small house called Immortal Works, and it was a fantastic experience. They're publishing the sequel this fall. Yeah, just a wonderful experience publishing with them. They've been so great. And it was really nice to have that kind of someone to hold my hand and show me the ropes, because I really like, I know how to write a book, but I know nothing about publishing or marketing a book at the time. So it was great to have them there. And yeah, I mean, that moment when I opened the email from them saying that they wanted to acquire Oceans of Sand, which is my first book, I just screamed. I freaked out. It was the best moment ever. So that was 100% worth it. With my book coming out tomorrow, which I'm not sure when this is going to air, but it's definitely out by now. It's called The God Heist. It's set in the Oceans of Sand world, and I really wanted to be able to give that one away to newsletter subscribers. So if you get on my mailing list at jessicaflory.com, you're going to automatically get that book. It's a novella, and it's a lot of fun. It's a great introduction to my writing style and the world that Oceans of Sand is in. So I really wanted to be able to give that one away as kind of a reward or an enticement to signing up for my mailing list. So I knew I had to self-publish that one because I wouldn't be able to give it away if it was traditionally published. So I kind of had to, you know, take a step into the unknown and learn a whole lot about self-publishing because there is a lot to learn. But it's been great and such a rewarding experience. And now to finally see that book that I've put my heart and soul into and put so much work into coming into the world, just can't even describe what an amazing feeling it is. So really excited about that one. Both routes, traditional and self-publishing, have just been unbelievably amazing experiences. So
Good. Yeah. Wow. So many things. You mentioned that you like to consider the kind of the scientific implications or effects in world building. And so do I. And sometimes it's hard to know when to just take a step back and wave, do the hand wavium, like, this thing is this way in this world because it is.
Yeah.
So I write it. Wow.
We're writers here. This is why we have editors.
Now, I consider myself to be good with spelling and grammar, but actually don't have to be good with spelling or grammar to produce a good work.
Absolutely.
A fiction. Like, it's all about the story structure and 100%. The character development, and an editor can clean it up.
Yeah.
But so I write it. I started writing the Grand Hill Chronicles, although I didn't have a name for it yet, in 2010. And in 2014-ish, I self-invented the concept of a web novel. If it existed anywhere else, I was unaware of it. But I was like, you know, I want to share this with people. So I also want to make myself keep writing it. So I'll like post a chapter a week, you know. That was the idea, and I didn't get very far with it because I was pretty busy. But with that book, which is not done yet, I've set it aside.
Okay.
Because I care a lot about it, and I need to get things right for myself. Yeah. I need to get things.
You want
to
do it right.
Within the right aesthetic.
Yep. Makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so in 2017, 18, anyway, somewhere in between there, the Grand Hill Chronicles occurs across worlds.
Oh.
And I wanted to be nerdy and like keep careful track of when things are happening on different worlds. And so you have like different time zones on different worlds and they're on different seasons. Oh my God. And each world's year lasts a different amount of time and each world's day is a different length.
Wow.
And so I created an Excel spreadsheet to deal with that. And like, I was calculating it, as a number of seconds after some initial point in time before the story began, and everything was going to be calculated as that many seconds. And then I could look at the Excel sheet to see like, this happened here and it was noon, but this happened at the same time in this other world. What time of day was it? What season was it? And so like nerding out like that, I didn't get very far with that either. I was too busy. I want to. Yeah. I will. After Nightshade Unicorn.
Mm-hmm.
And then so that's one side of things. And then the other side of things, in 2020, I was doing some I guess beyond world building, it was universe building. In this universe, in the Grand Hill Chronicles universe. I did some sketching and had this wacky idea to have one of the worlds is a moon orbiting a Jupiter-like planet. Mm-hmm. And I tilted it on its side, and then I decided that the pole would stay pointing at the world that it's orbiting. But that doesn't work. Okay. Physics doesn't work like that, because it's got to rotate on its axis, and mm-hmm. that rotation would keep it, it'd have a gyroscopic effect, you know, and so that the pole would not mm-hmm. stay pointed in. And
right.
And somebody online in some Facebook group pointed that out, yeah. but did so in a manner where I felt attacked.
Oh no. Oh, that's too bad.
And he was probably just trying to help me out, like, you know, this doesn't make sense, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I thought this was a cool idea. And so I finally, like, it's a fantasy universe. There's magic and yeah, aliens. So there.
Yeah. That sounds like a way cool idea. Come on. It's fantasy. It doesn't have to be perfectly true to life. But yeah, that sounds like a really cool idea. I like that a lot.
Yeah. But it's not that kind of fantasy though. Like, oh my goodness. Did you see, what's the movie called? It might be called Upside Down. Kirsten Dunst. And I don't remember the guy's name, but it's a sci-fi or science fantasy romance. Oh. It's a romance is what it is.
Okay.
But the setting is, most people would say sci-fi, but I'm going to say science fantasy because these two planets were rotating the same star, and they just, each one had its own brand of gravity.
Oh.
And each planet and everything on it adhered to that brand of gravity, and they ignored each other.
Oh my gosh. Oh.
So they're like hovering in space, maybe half a kilometer apart.
No way.
And the societies on each planet have come together. There's a single building that goes in between.
What? Okay. I need to see this. Yeah. I have not seen that. That sounds really cool.
Yeah. And like, you could travel in that building to the other planet, but if you just step out in the street, you'll fall back home.
Oh, interesting.
So like the two kinds of gravity. No, it doesn't, yeah, like that doesn't make happen any like that,
but it's a cool idea.
It's like, yeah. Doctor Who is science fantasy. It's not science fiction. They have so many things they just throw out there. There's an actual witchcraft episode with the 10th Doctor.
Oh, that's funny. I've never seen Doctor Who. I need to watch it.
Yeah. That's funny. I stopped with the 11th Doctor.
Okay.
Maybe I got into the 12th Doctor a little bit. But it's good with the 9th and 10th for sure.
Okay. Good to know.
And then it's good for a lot of the 11th, but then.
Yeah. Mm.
Anyway, so clean fantasy.
Yeah.
Why? What do you think?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think there's a few answers to that for me personally. The main one being that I want my kids to be able to read my books, and I don't want to have to worry about what's in them, you know, like. I'm a mom, I'm a Christian, I have certain beliefs that I hold very dear. And not saying that if you read, you know, smutty romance books, you're completely in the wrong and you should not do that, because everybody's got different tastes and that's totally fine. But for me personally, this is what I want to read, this is what I want to write, it's what I want my kids reading, and so that's what I put out into the world. And it's kind of surprising how many people feel the same way. Like, I was nervous about marketing a clean fantasy book because a lot of what you see out there, especially big names in fantasy romance specifically, are putting out, you know, kind of books with a lot of explicit content. And that's what's really popular a lot these days. And so I was nervous about that, but yeah, I've been able to find a community of awesome readers who want clean romance books and clean fantasy romance books. There's a whole side of Instagram, which is where I'm mainly doing my social media things, with the handle Jessica Flory Author, if you're interested. But yeah, there's a whole side of Bookstagram where people just want their books to stay clean and they don't want to see that on-page romance scenes or the swear words. And so it's been really cool to find that community of like-minded people who have these pain points of they want to read great, you know, heart-pumping romance and this awesome fantasy that just draws them into the world, but they don't want all the explicit content with it. So yeah, it's been really rewarding. And you also do see authors like Brandon Sanderson. I mean, he's not really fantasy romance. There are romance elements in some of his books, but I mean, he's huge and he's putting out mostly clean books, like 95% clean books, you know, which is awesome. Like, I love that. And he's one of the top fantasy writers of our day. So there's definitely a demand for it. People want it. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and, sorry, I had this other thought. I'll read this quote. But I'll come back just because I derailed myself mentally before I started talking. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
So, this is from a general in the U.S. Army, a few years ago, and I'll reveal that more particularly afterwards. But surely some people, well, maybe not surely. I don't have tons of listeners, but so this general said, "The general is sorry to be informed that the foolish and wicked practice of profane cursing and swearing, a vice hitherto little known in our American army, is growing into fashion. He hopes that the officers will, by example as well as influence, endeavor to check it, and that both they and the men will reflect that we can little hope of the blessing of heaven on our army if we insult it by our impiety and folly. Added to this, it is a vice so mean and low without any temptation that every man of sense and character detests and despises it."
Wow.
That is from none other than George Washington.
Wow. That's awesome.
In August of 1776.
Wow. What a cool quote. So, love that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say, like, there's just really not any need for
100% agree. Like, it's a fantasy world. Why would they have more curse words? Why? Like, well, it just doesn't make
sense. I'll play devil's advocate. And I don't know if you've ever listened to the Writer Dojo podcast.
I have. I have to look it up.
But they're a curious pair. But so, like, you mentioned Brandon Sanderson, and his stuff is pretty clean. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say 100%. He's freer with language than I would choose to be.
Yeah.
And there have been a couple of moments where it went a little closer to explicit than I would be as well. Sorry, I forgot what I was saying. There's Brandon Sanderson. The dojo, the Writer Dojo.
Yes.
So these guys are members of the same church I go to, and
me too.
They're Christian, but they
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about, Brandon Sanderson. Sorry. I don't know these people. Sorry.
No, same.
I made a mistake.
Same.
Oh,
same.
Oh, cool. Okay. Cool. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. But these guys, they're free with the language.
Okay. Interesting.
And they keep the podcast words pretty clean. Not absolutely, but, but yeah, several years ago, I listened to an audiobook, of Larry Correia's.
Okay.
And I would not have guessed that it was from a member of the church by the language, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then you have like, J. Golden Kimball, who they call the swearing apostle.
Swearing apostle?
Sorry, I'm going to come way back around to there is no need for it. But mm-hmm. meanwhile, playing devil's advocate.
Yeah, continue.
So J. Golden Kimball was an apostle in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And he was called the swearing apostle because sometimes
that is funny.
He used some words that were a little bit stronger than most members of the church would.
Hilarious.
And there's one story I remember, and I don't know if it's actually a true story, but he was giving some dignitaries a tour of Temple Square. And, you know, he's like, you know, this is the tabernacle. Here's the history behind it. We use it for this. And then here's this assembly hall and the history behind it. But like every building they visited, there was this one guy from England who would say, oh yeah, you know, we have something that's grander and more impressive back home.
Wow.
Yeah. I see what you're saying, but man, back home, it's way awesome.
Jeez.
And so then at one point in the tour, this gentleman interrupts and says, and what's that building there? And he points at the Salt Lake Temple, which is an impressive geographical landmark. You know, mm-hmm. it's a big, impressive building.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a huge landmark in the church history. It took 40 years to build. But as the story goes, J. Golden Kimball glanced at it and said, darned if I know, thing wasn't there yesterday.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
So back to the dojo.
That's too funny.
They had an episode of their podcast about swearing.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
In fiction. And how it's used.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree that there is an aesthetic rationale.
Yes.
If you want to convey a certain aesthetic that is most effectively done with swearing, if not impossible without.
Yes, I do. I see. Yeah, I've heard that point before.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I heard a lot of buzz about the what's the current big buzzy fantasy series?
Fourth Wing. Are you talking about Fourth Wing?
Yeah, Fourth Wing.
Yeah,
I started hearing a lot of buzz about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I went on to Amazon and I looked at the sample inside, F word on the first page.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's on every page.
Not for me.
Yeah.
Not what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can do that and it conveys right off, this is that kind of story, or it's gonna have that kind of stuff inside.
Yeah, at least she put it on the front page so people would know, like, okay, this is going to be there, and you know, put it down or keep going, but this is what it is.
Yeah,
I will. And say, sorry, keep going.
So now, where I think you're coming from, and where I'm coming from, and this is my first book, and right now I'm holding the first.
It's gorgeous.
The first physical copy.
Oh my god!
Of it,
it's beautiful. I love it.
It arrived yesterday.
Oh, congratulations! Oh my.
And I'm, thanks. I am currently suffering those publishing lessons.
Mm.
So I published on February 28th.
Okay.
So this has been out for 2 weeks. Yesterday.
Oh wow! Yeah.
And
pretty new.
In order to meet this deadline that I had set for myself to publish on February 28th, I published on Amazon ebook, paperback, and hardcover without proof copies first.
Oh,
and
okay.
Uh-huh. Now I'm feeling the pain because
really?
So like this is mostly great. Like I would proudly hand this, except for some significant details.
Oh, really?
So my daughter, I mean, for one, easily fixed, is my daughter pointed out this in the pronunciation guide, this character with that last name. I don't give a last name for this character in the book.
Oh,
and
funny.
If he has a last name, it's certainly not the same last name as the main character.
Oh! So,
that was just, I must have been tired when I typed that in. And,
oh man.
Yeah. So I need to upload new manuscript files all around
Well, that's
and how you take learn. Out that last
that's
name.
How you learn. It definitely could have been worse. At least your cover is like formatted correctly and it looks beautiful.
Well, yeah. Now the thing with the cover, there is one thing with the cover file is that I did it with GIMP. And GIMP doesn't speak CMYK.
Oh man, I don't know what you printers mean.
CMYK is cyan, magenta, yellow, and key.
Okay.
I think that's black, but GIMP, the GNU image manipulation program. GIMP speaks RGB. RGB. And when you convert from RGB to CMYK, you might wind up with kind of washed out blacks.
Oh, really? Oh, man.
And so I don't know if it's just because of the way Amazon prints it or if it's because of the conversion RGB to CMYK.
Okay.
But I think this does look a little washed out, that the blacks aren't bright and dark enough.
Interesting.
So, I mean, that's easily fixed now because yes, easily, but still tedious because I have learned to use another software called Scribus.
Okay.
And so I have generated a new file from scratch again, from the artwork that the artist gave me. It was done by Vivid Covers, by the way.
Okay.
And I think she did a great job.
She did a beautiful job. Yeah.
But I only paid her for one formatted cover.
Okay.
And then she gave me the materials and I formatted other covers, other versions of the cover, you know.
Smart.
Including this one. Mm-hmm. And that's why this one went through GIMP.
Okay.
And
okay.
That's growing pains. But then the biggest growing pain.
Mm-hmm. It's
like I might leave it alone for that last name issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I might leave it alone for the kind of washed out black
mm-hmm.
on the cover. But look at that. What do you notice in the book?
It's a little blurry for me. I mean, from what I can see, it looks margins. Good, but the margin, yeah, I see what you're saying. The margins are a little big. Yeah, just a little bit.
That's,
I feel like it would.
That's because. Too bad.
Oh, no, why?
I meant to publish at 4.5 by 7 inch trim.
Okay.
And I got the template for 4.5 by 7 inch, but then when I went and actually published, see, Amazon doesn't carry, that's not one of their trim sizes. You can do a custom trim size,
mm-hmm.
but I forgot to do that when I actually created it.
Oh no.
And so this is 5.06 by 7.81
okay.
trim. It's a little bit bigger,
uh-huh.
but the inside still printed at the correct size.
Interesting. Oh yeah. Well, that's how you learn.
And
you know, there's a lot to learn with self-publishing.
And I can't change the trim size. You can't change the trim size after you've published. So that's the ouch. Cause I didn't do a proof copy before I published.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you know, it's still a beautiful book that I would be super proud of, honestly.
Well, thanks. And the ebook is still there. The hardcover is still there because I used a common trim size for the hardcover, 6x9.
Okay.
You know, this 4.25 by 7 isn't common.
Mm-hmm.
Even the 5.06 by 7.81 is also not really common.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm working on fixing that. I can change the formatting inside,
okay.
but then I have to go and reformat it in Atticus.
Mm.
And that doesn't blow up the pages. I wonder if I should just do a print to PDF and blow it up that blow up the pages like that.
Yeah.
So that you have everything, all the pages are formatted the same, they're just bigger.
True. You know? Yeah, that could work.
Yeah. What I have done as of right now is I went back into Atticus and gave it the different trim size and re-exported, and it gives it a different page count.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay.
Which means a different spine thickness, which means a new cover file.
No. Oh, man.
So, anyway, back to clean fantasy. enough woes of... So the book is available, and you just can't buy the paperback right now. Give it a week, and it'll be up. I mean, maybe 3 days, but definitely within a week, the paperback would be available again.
Yeah, good luck.
But what I meant to say with this, and I imagine with yours,
mm-hmm.
So I don't have anything that we would consider bad words or swear words.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing sexually explicit. But there is danger.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's blood, not tons. And I've kind of debated with myself as to how bloody I would get.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whereas like, so I did about 12 years active duty Marine Corps and, never deployed, but, you get trained on things and you learn combat life-saving. And so you attend classes, or training sessions where they talk about how to treat battlefield wounds and
wow.
Keeping that Marine alive until they can get to, a proper hospital,
mm-hmm.
You know?
I bet that's super useful as a writer. Wow. I would love to know that stuff.
Yeah, it hasn't, I don't think I've really used that knowledge yet, but,
okay. Mm-hmm.
But, you see things like, and like you learn how to kill. Go to the rifle range, go to the pistol range, and they show you where to shoot to be more effective. Because if you hit somebody on the shoulder, if they're in a battle, they've probably got plenty of adrenaline. They're still in the fight.
Yeah.
You know, that's not taking them down.
Yeah, good point.
So you learn like how bullets tear through organs and like... I guess I'm getting a little visceral or what's the word? Graphic.
Yeah.
A little bit graphic warning right now. Yeah, like if you shoot somebody in they illustrate a T-box on some targets and you get it like inside this T-box,
mm-hmm.
It's gonna enter and hit the medulla oblongata. Or however you pronounce that, not a doctor. And that's lights out. Like,
oh, wow.
They're dead before you hit the ground.
Interesting.
Whereas if you hit a major artery in an arm or a leg, now they talk about this in terms of like your buddy's been hit. How are you going to save his life?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You have to like stop the bleeding. And like if you see bright red spurting blood, that's an artery wound.
Okay.
And they need a tourniquet. If you see smoothly flowing dark red blood, that's venal bleeding. And you can press that to suppress the bleeding.
Wow, this is so interesting.
But yeah, sorry, there's not that much blood in Nightshade Unicorn. There's a little bit. And that's kind of necessary to the story, in part because, and I can see proponents of swear words in fiction saying that they do this with their swear words, but you need to have some blood for it to be serious. Like if there is serious, world threatening danger, there's going to have to be some, you have to show some of it.
Yeah.
It's like in Wheel of Time, Rand lost his hand.
Yeah.
You know, his hand was blasted off.
Yeah.
And the character, the main character, suffered something that, I mean, even in a lot of movies that people take really seriously, main characters are plot armored, protected, that nothing happens directly to them or to those that are close to them.
Yeah.
But I, there's Lord of the Rings where Frodo lost a finger. He was rescued.
Yeah.
Which we all wanted, because that's a happy ending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he doesn't get that back.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, no, I'd say that clean fantasy doesn't necessarily mean that there's no danger or it's not serious, exactly like you said, right? Like, there's still hard things happening to the characters. There's still heavy themes that are dealt with sometimes. You know, it's still going to be an emotional roller coaster for the reader if it's done well. And, you know, people define clean as, different ways. But yeah, in my books anyway, I keep them clean by, like, the reader knows what's happening, but I don't get overly descriptive with the violence, right? Like, that's the beautiful thing about a book. You can imagine as much as you want to, or as much whatever you don't want to, right? You don't have to see it the way you are if you're watching a movie. So where a movie kind of, they can either show you exactly what's happening, or they can cut so you know what's happening but you don't see it. You know, a book, the author can be more descriptive or less descriptive, and you can imagine it how you want to, right? So I keep my books on the somewhat less descriptive side of the violence anyway.
Yeah. And that brings up another question where I see people doing trigger warnings
graphic
gore mm-hmm. graphic content warnings
mm-hmm.
And I am not really in favor for that for books. I appreciate it for movies, but for books, like, you do that through the marketing largely. But I think the defining or the differentiating factor is that in a book, the reader is not passive.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, absolutely. You can skip a couple pages if you need to, you know, like, you're in charge of your experience even more than you are when you're watching a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think why people do that though, because some people are really triggered by violence, or, you know, if there's suicide in your book, some people really might not want to read that. So I see why that's becoming more of a thing to have those trigger warnings. Yeah, I have mixed feelings about it. I think they are really helpful to some people. They're also like a tiny bit of a spoiler, maybe sometimes. It's like you pick up a book and you see trigger warnings about suicide or abuse, and you're like, okay, well, now I know there's going to be suicide and abuse. And the whole time you're reading that, you're like, okay, when is this going to happen? You know, so it changes your experience a little bit. I still think it can be a really good thing. Especially if some books are leaning very heavily towards those triggers and they're, you know, frequently popping up in the book, I would say you probably definitely want to have a warning for readers who are sensitive about that topic. But
I don't know. I see where you're coming from, but then you also don't want to have spoilers. And if I were to write something, and I very well might, that kind of tackles depression, I wouldn't want to do a spoiler. Like, I think that people who have gone through it will recognize the signs.
Yeah.
And I would present it, because this is who I am. I would present it in such a manner that we see the other side, or I'm communicating my view of that issue through the character's eyes and perceptions and decisions.
Yeah.
And so, like, somebody who's been through that would recognize this and hopefully be led through it to the other side.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And that could be a positive experience.
Yeah.
And somebody who hasn't
like someone understands.
That,
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody who hasn't been through it might wonder why the character is thinking this way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe it can be education.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, and if you have those trigger warnings, say there's a trigger warning, there's depression in this book, you might, you know, someone who has depression, they might put it down. They're like, oh, I don't want to read about that. Whereas if they just pick the book up and then they really see themselves in your character and they feel validated and seen and heard, like that could be a really therapeutic, rewarding experience, you know, that they would have otherwise missed out on. And I think that's really the power of stories, right? Is to help people feel recognized and that they are not alone in their experiences. So I think that's really a powerful thing.
And that makes me think of Wheel of Time.
I love
when, because Rand has a moment where he kind of is able to turn around and shed a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I love Wheel of Time on so many levels. It's just such a brilliant series. Yeah, so relatable. Rand is a fantastic character. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they did trigger warnings when that was coming out. I could be wrong, but yeah, there would be trigger warnings all over that book that might alienate some people who otherwise would love it. Not to keep bashing on trigger warnings. Like I said before, I think they can be really, really good, but there are definitely pros and cons.
Yeah. And I'm now back to, as you mentioned the fantasy world made up swear words.
Mm-hmm.
And I have mixed feelings about that. I definitely appreciate that they're not using the real world swear words,
mm-hmm.
but on the other hand, it's still like, what's the word? Oh my goodness. For an author, I'm not having a good time with words.
it happens.
It's continuing the permanence of having swear words rather than just saying what you mean. And
right.
I'm probably too much of a literalist. Not just with words, but I don't know where I'm going.
No, yeah, I see what you're saying. Mm-hmm.
It's like the Mormon swear words where if you say
yeah.
fudge, people know what
yeah.
you mean.
What are you really trying to say? Yeah. No, sometimes fantasy swear words can become a crutch, right? They can be a really good thing, and also they can be overused because sometimes you just want a character who swears a lot, but you don't want to offend people. So fantasy swear words are awesome. But when all of
on the other hand.
Yeah, exactly. If all of your characters
yeah.
are swearing all the time, how realistic is that, right? And maybe, you know, that could be an intentional choice that could be just part of your world. Maybe that's just part of their culture, but it can make your characters seem all one note, and then your fantasy swear words are lacking in their purpose. Like, why are they even there? And that can happen with real swear words too. Like, to go back to Fourth Wing, I did read some of it, and all the characters said all the swear words. Like, I thought she did some really interesting things in that book. And so I don't want to bash on her. And she's obviously very, very successful. But one thing I think she could have done better was just differentiating her characters and the amount of swearing that they were each comfortable with. It felt like all of the characters just swore like sailors, right? Like it was just, yeah, all over the place. And so I felt like she was missing an opportunity with her characterization there. And the same thing can happen with fantasy swear words. The other thing with fantasy swear words is that you mentioned this before, that swearing can, you know, it really packs an emotional punch sometimes when used at the right moment. And sometimes because fantasy swear words aren't our swear words, they can be kind of lacking in that in that emotion, right? And with me, I still choose to not use real swear words for the reasons I mentioned before, but I do see why some authors choose to use real swear words just to get that kind of that emotional punch that can come there. And, you know, Brandon Sanderson, yeah. He's a mostly clean author, but his characters do use real swear words on occasion, probably for that reason. So, yeah, lots of different things to consider when you're choosing what to read and what to write and what you're comfortable with.
Yeah. And swearing is an interesting concept. Like it's not the same in every language and in every culture.
Yeah.
Like apparently in Europe, it's a lot less taboo over there.
Oh, interesting.
And I saw a week or two ago, I saw a video, somebody saying in Japanese that they don't really have words that are, no words are so strong that they're considered swear words, but when you translate them, they are. Like in English, they become that.
That's fascinating.
And it seems kind of, what's it called when when you forget words so often? It seems arbitrary that in our culture we have these words that you're not supposed to say in certain settings. And now it kind of makes sense because they're thematic. Like that talks about something that we don't really talk about in this setting.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have professional settings where you have to talk about that thing. And so instead you call it excrement or stool,
right,
you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's just that we have this one word that used to be just the word for it in Old English or whatever. It just used to be the word for it. It wasn't an ugly word. It was just the word.
Mm-hmm.
But now we have more polite words and you don't say that other word.
Yeah, fascinating, huh?
It is a little arbitrary. So it's not like there's any, to take it back to like strip the rules away down to bare Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
You're not neglecting the poor and you're not, you're not stealing. You're not, lying when you drop a swear word, you know, like what's the issue with it? Well, it's cultural and
it's cultural.
It's
right.
Conveying
yeah.
who you are and how you communicate. And we have the language that's been given to us and we are in the cultural backdrop that we are in.
Mm-hmm. That's so fascinating. Yeah. Especially I think as a writer, thinking about our language like that is so powerful because when you're thinking of new worlds, you want to have that in mind. How do they treat their language? What, you know, do they even have swear words? Like you said about the Japanese culture, how there's not really words that are super taboo like we have, right? Rather than approaching it as like, okay, what are the swear words in my world? Trying to think about it. Okay, why are those the swear words? And do they even have swear words? Like that's so interesting. So yeah, loving this discussion.
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't have anywhere else to go with the conversation right now. Maybe I've forgotten something, but I think it's been a really interesting conversation.
Yeah, this has been fascinating.
So why don't you tell us again where to find you, where to find your books, where listeners can find at and read some clean fantasy.
Yeah, I would love to. So my website is jessicaflory.com, and that's F-L-O-R-Y. You can get a free novella there that'll give you kind of a taste of my writing, and I'm super proud of this novella. It's called The God Heist. It kind of mixes Six of Crows with Mistborn. So if you like kind of heist fantasy, I think you'll really enjoy it with some pretty unique world building and a little bit of that sweet romance in there as well. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook with the handle Jessica Flory Author, so you can find me there. My books are all on Amazon, barnesandnoble.com, and you can also, there's links where to get them on my website, jessicaflory.com. So Yeah, thank you so much, Dawn, for having me. I had a blast. This was such a fun discussion, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and let's hang on a minute after we stop recording. But yeah, thank you for coming on the podcast. And for our listeners, we'll catch you next time. Oh, and just for your information, Jessica, mm-hmm. I am slating this discussion for 2 weeks out. Is that correct? Okay. Let me check my calendar. So we're recording today on March 14th. Happy Pi Day.
Ooh, yeah.
And we are looking at... the 28th. Yeah. 2 weeks out from today.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And then we'll talk after I stop the recording.
Okay.
We'll catch you next time on the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast.